ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
If I had to pick one word to describe America's history in the Middle East, I'd probably go with mistake.
But it was, the Americans believe, all a dreadful mistake.
The backpackers crossed the poorly marked border by mistake.
The war in Iraq was a big, fat mistake.
So why is it happening again? I'm Matt Bevan, and on my show, if you're listening, we actually try to learn from the world's mistakes. Find us on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Prime Minister has unveiled a $10 billion energy security package, including the establishment of a permanent government-owned fuel reserve, all in a bid to help secure Australia's energy sovereignty. That word sovereignty, it's really the buzzword of our times. But as Treasurer Jim Chalmers looks to put the final touches on next week's budget, the RBA Governor Michelle Bullock has warned the government to be careful spending doesn't add to inflation. Meanwhile, big stories broken. A cohort of so-called ISIS brides and their children are set to arrive in Australia tomorrow evening, with the AFP Commissioner confirming some will be arrested and charged upon their arrival. Welcome to Politics Now. Hi, I'm Patricia Carvelis.
And I'm David Spears.
And David, before we start, a quick acknowledgement that my brave punt that the RBA would hold rates on yesterday's pod that I also declared was based on no inside knowledge absolutely at all was quickly disproven. I was hoping for all of you who have mortgages that I was correct, but I wasn't.
A lot of people would have had their fingers crossed that you were right. I admire your bravery, PK. It was a brave call. You put it out there.
Yeah.
Can't always be right with these things.
I just didn't care if I was wrong because I was pretty upfront about the fact that you wouldn't be relying on me for that sort of call. Now, first today, we're going to talk about, of course, the budget. How can we not? But we know a bit about what's going in the budget because the government has to put in the budget what it's just announced. And that's the Prime Minister had a virtual national cabinet meeting today. Then he unveiled a $10 billion energy security package. Of course, that will be in the budget, but the government's been, I think, pretty smart in their media strategy, actually. I reckon one of the best media strategies I've seen pre-budget, calling it, in terms of announcing things and allowing people enough time to digest them. This investment is going to lead to 50 days of fuel supply and storage of diesel and aviation fuel. And the centrepiece of the announcement is this government-owned fuel reserve, right? So they can deploy where the fuel goes when there are crises like the one we're in at the moment. It's all about sovereign capability at the core of this. David, what's your analysis of what they've announced? I mean, it's a big, big ticket thing, right? It's very expensive.
It is. Just on the budget media strategy, remember those days, PK, when we were young journos and you'd find out everything on budget night? It was a whole bunch of announcements. These days, those days are long gone, aren't they? But this sort of pre-announcing all the measures before the budget has been an art form of the Albanese government. But it feels like each year we're getting more and more of the pre-announcements well ahead of budget night itself, which isn't until Tuesday next week. And
they always keep some little surprise up their sleeve though, don't they?
Oh yeah. This is all about clearing the decks for where they want the attention on Tuesday night. And what I found fascinating just while we're on this is that instead of all the goodies being announced ahead of the big one on Tuesday night, this year it feels like all the they're making a virtue of all the spending cuts. So the big one was the NDIS. We've had the electric vehicles tax break being wound back yesterday, inland rail being, well, cut in half. What else? The private health insurance rebate, the more generous one for over 65. So a lot of announcements of spending cuts. They're making a virtue of we're being restrained here because of this inflation problem. We're spending, we're saving more than the new spending that we will announce. And yeah, you can, I counted this morning, in fact, how many times Jim Chalmers said the word responsible in relation to this budget across his various media interviews. Have a guess. How many times do you reckon he rolled it out?
I'm going for 60.
It was 24. I mean, 60 is a little over the top. But 24.
You said across his media interviews, yeah, didn't he do like six or something?
I thought it was a lot. Anyway, you'll hear that word no doubt 60 times between now and Tuesday, let alone in the budget speech itself. Responsible, responsible, responsible. Anyway, let's turn to the announcement today on the fuel reserve. So the government, PK, is now getting into the business of government-owned fuel for the first time. Isn't this exciting?
Mm.
Us taxpayers will now own a fuel reserve. Apparently, we're one of the few member nations of the International Energy Agency that doesn't do this, doesn't have a government-owned fuel reserve. What we have at the moment are the fuel companies are required to hold, what is it, around 30 days of each type of fuel. They will be required to lift that to around 40, and then the government will own about 10 days, about a billion litres of fuel. Exactly where and how it'll be held, they've got to negotiate that with the industry. But look, it is fascinating. And this, you really hit on the word sovereign capability. That's what this is all about.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked a lot about this, haven't we, over the last, well, a couple of years. The world is changing. This need for more self-sufficiency, resilience, sovereign capability. This is a big example of it. The government of Australia, taxpayers for the first time getting into the business of owning a fuel reserve. All of this, $10 billion, that includes, well, a lot of that includes the underwriting they've been doing of shipments of fuel, and that will continue. $10 billion, the price tag that really, PK, we probably wouldn't have faced were it not for this war in Iran.
Mm, and it's expensive, this war, isn't it? Not only is it costing all of us taxpayers more, just anyone more because of the cost of living crisis that it's continuing, exacerbating, adding to, which we'll talk about in a minute in terms of what the RBA said to us yesterday, which is that we're all getting poorer and never has there been a truer sentence. We all feel it. But I think that it's also costing us literally in terms of this big announcement. Now, there's also, of course, that part of it, which is the $10 million for feasibility studies into expanded refinery capabilities. Mm. That's, again, very interesting, David. I just think that's a bit of a nod, isn't it, to some of these ideas. We need to be refining more of our own fuel. What did you think of that?
Yeah, just on that. I mean, it's not a lot of money in the scheme of things, but I think New South Wales government has indicated they're thinking about considering getting back into fuel refining, I assume at Kurnell. So, look, maybe there's a bit of money there to have a closer look at that. And I think there's also options there for smaller bio diesel refining as well. Maybe there's some money involved there. Look, is this going to be enough? At the end of the day, it's not as much as the 60-day reserve that Angus Taylor promised a couple of weeks ago. He got in ahead of this. But his idea, his model was to have the industry do it and we'd all pay a little bit more at the pump. I think they said 1 cent a litre, so not that much. And it's not the 90-day reserve that the IEA has recommended, but that I think it's is considered
edging up, though,
too
edging
expensive.
Up.
But we're getting there. We're increasing. Is it going to be enough? Look, it really depends. This crisis isn't over. We have more fuel now in the country than we did before the war. The government deserves some credit for that. It's been busy trying to get these shipments to Australia, but, you know, the price is still way too high and we just don't know where this is going to go. I mean, are we going to end up with rationing? That's still an open question. You might have heard this morning the US Secretary of State Marco Rubio declaring Operation Epic Fury is concluded. We achieved the objectives of that operation. I mean, obviously they haven't achieved the objectives that Trump laid out at the start of this on the nuclear front and so on. But, you know, there is Marco Rubio saying, done, Operation Epic Fury's over. PK, why wasn't there dancing in the streets or at the fuel pumps as a result of this? Why wasn't the PM out there rushing to celebrate this good news? It's because we all
know he's epically furious still that it's going on. That's why.
We're getting these contradictory messages every other day from the Trump administration about whether this war is on or not, whether it's still happening, whether it's going to be guiding ships through the strait or not. I mean, poor old Marco Rubio and Pete Hegseth this morning were saying, we're now moving into Project Freedom, which is guiding commercial ships through the strait. And then a couple of hours later, Trump goes on social media and says, we're suspending Project Freedom. It's just hard to keep up with this stuff.
It's embarrassing. That's what it is. It's embarrassing. It looks so incompetent. And that's because it is.
Yeah.
You know, the idea that it's some sort of elaborate, brilliant plan, which of course is the smoke and mirrors of the way Trump works. He's playing four-dimensional chess. We're meant to think he's a genius. I think he's been really exposed as not being particularly strategic, and it's left and the world clearly, economy on its knees, hasn't it?
He clearly wants this over. He clearly wants out.
He's
clearly
desperate
wants
to get out, but he can't
to
find
never
an
talk
off-ramp.
About this again. But how do you do it when Iran has still got that choke on the Strait of Hormuz? And that means that governments everywhere, including here, central banks as well, having a hell of a time trying to work out what to do.
So let's go to the central banks and what they're trying to do, because that's pretty significant. And if you have a mortgage, you know exactly what we're about to talk about. That's the third interest rate rise this year. That kind of erases the gains. Remember last year we had the three interest rate cuts. That was
happy
very
days,
exciting for those of us who have mortgages. Those who don't, I understand, don't get as excited. Obviously, it depends where you are. But those of us with thumping mortgages trying to raise families definitely were happy. Less happy now. We get the little notice, as I'm sure you have, David, from your bank saying, hey, how's about it? We're going to pay
long,
more.
It doesn't take long.
Thanks, man. I was
remarkably
on it.
Quick. Yeah.
Okay. So interest rates up 25 basis points. Interesting the result. So yeah, I did get this massively wrong, but the board deciding to increase 8-1. So just one little
one
quiet
was with
vote
you, PK.
Me.
One unnamed board member was
someone who knows that people are having a really hard time, I suspect, and that maybe there is also risk involved with this. But I think the things that Michelle Bullock said in her press conference were really interesting.
Yep.
And to me, they were very obvious. And there is no reading into it. They were blatant warnings to the government. So she said that the extent to which the government makes up the shortfalls for households by giving them more money, it makes it harder to dampen demand. Now, this is, of course, the wicked problem. You're a government. You want to help people. You want to help people because then they're less grumpy, but also maybe just because you're a nice person and you want to help people too, and you know that helping people is good. However, the wicked problem with inflation, of course, is if you want to deal with the shortfall that their thumping mortgage repayments is dealing with by giving them a little gift and perhaps a tax offset or a little cash prize in the budget, then it adds to inflation. So she's saying, hey, that doesn't deal with our problem. Well, she's correct. Basic economics, she's correct. The Treasurer played this warning down. He called it a hypothetical answer to a hypothetical question. He can say that if he wants, but I did not see anything hypothetical about what she said. I saw it as a real sentence coming out of a real governor's mouth with a real warning, David.
Yeah, I mean, the question, which was from the journalist at The Australian, Murray Cranston, who broke this story yesterday around the suggestion that it'd be a $200 to $300 tax break, if you like, one-off for wage earners coming. The question he put to the Reserve Bank governor was about stimulus. And what the Treasurer has said in response to all of this, well, we're not going to be pouring in a heap of stimulus to the economy. And that word heap, I think, is doing a lot of heavy lifting here. And he's, again, you know, using that word, this will be responsible, this budget. We're actually going to save more than the new spending. But he's not ruling out some sort of handout to wage earners. It may not come until the end of the next financial year, which would be mid-2027, rather than a big pile of cash being dropped into people's pockets right now when inflation is running so hot. We don't know. We'll find out budget night what the details of this are, but it does sound like there's some sort of relief coming as part of this broader tax reform package that will include the negative gearing, capital gains and trust changes. So anyway, look, we'll see where that lands. But you're right. Michelle Bullock's message was pretty clear, and it was to governments not to, you know, make up the shortfall for all the pain people are feeling by putting money in their pockets. That's going to make her job harder. Governments is important there because it's not just the federal government, it's the states. And I was listening to Tom Crowley on RN this morning making this point, PK, and I hadn't spotted it, but the Victorian state budget, they've got an election in November, so we're just around the corner. They are pouring out the spending, some $3.6 billion in the coming year alone. Mm. I mean, how is that going to make the Reserve Bank's job any easier? It is not. So while Jim Chalmers is doing, you know, what he can to be responsible and find more savings than new spending, he's not being helped, it would seem, by some of the states.
A Labor person texted me this morning. I was texting with someone and they said to me, this is a federal Labor person, I should be clear, just saying, you know, news today is that Victoria has no money. And I was like, no shit.
But on the challenge for the Treasurer, I mean, what do you think here, PK, the messaging that we're hearing about the responsibility of this budget and the fact that they're not going to be pumping huge amounts, heaps, to use the Treasurer's word, of stimulus into the economy right now? I think they well know they'd be absolutely hammered if they did come out of this budget doing anything that looks like pumping up inflation. They know they need to be restrained here. And the pre-announcements suggest they are going to be. I mean, we'll see the colour of the money on Tuesday night. But yeah, what do you think about how they're messaging the responsibility?
Well, if they hold the line and if whatever this... Look, it's a tricky one because perhaps this tax offset, whatever it might be for earned money, because we don't know exactly what that looks like. It's a leak. They haven't denied it, haven't quite confirmed it either. So some sort of version of this. It has to be pretty targeted, I think, rather than a total spray for it not to be widely
The report
rebuked.
Was that it wasn't going to be means tested. So unlike the Lomito, which was the low and middle income tax offset, this one not means tested. Only for wage, salary income, not for investment income.
Mm-hmm.
But
that's
not means tested
people,
means
though,
there's some pretty high income earners that'd be cashing in on that.
Yeah, but that's also just money in people's pockets. And, you know, as I said yesterday, that's like one plus one equals two, right? Like people.
It's all speculation though, PK. It's all speculation.
No, I think, look, they have said all the right things and they're clearly cutting back on spending. They've made that quite clear in a proper announcement in relation to the NDIS, but I suspect there'll be more areas that we'll be looking at. There are also the inland rail announcement that was made to cut that back. So there are.
Yeah, and I'm told, I understand there will be more savings on budget night, and they are going to go across each portfolio. So yes, we've heard about a few already and some big ones, but there will be more to come on the savings front on Tuesday night. But clearly they want the stage set for the big tax reform announcement on Tuesday night as the big budget night focus, I guess.
All of that is the focus because it's always the economy, but there is another story running at the moment that I suspect the government wishes it wasn't talking about, but they have to talk about it, and that's the issue of the so-called ISIS brides, a term I hate, but that's sort of widely used, returning to Australia, claiming quite a bit of spotlight. So the Home Affairs Minister, Tony Burke, stood up with the ASIO Chief Mike Burgess and the AFP Commissioner Chrissy Barrett this morning. They
On a separate announcement, by the way. They weren't standing up to talk about ISIS brides.
No, I'm glad you said that, David, because that was what they were planning to announce, this cyber anti-terrorism platform and money invested in trying to de-radicalise and identify, right? So all of this is what they should be doing, and they're trying to invest more in programs and tools to try and identify, radicalisation.
Yeah, people getting radicalised online, young men in particular, very quickly, and all of that's important. But it was perfect timing to have these three key players, the Minister, the ASIO boss and the Federal Police Commissioner, they're in front of the press just as the news broke that these ISIS families are jumping on a plane. They're going to be landing tomorrow night.
They will be. So 13 women and children. So they've made these plans to travel from Syria to Australia. Of course, they obtained passports, which makes that possible. There was a lot of contentious debate around, the facilitation of that being able to happen. The government saying it's their legal right. Tony Burke has said the government has a plan to manage and monitor the group. He reaffirmed that the government won't provide any assistance to the cohort. The Prime Minister was also asked off the National Cabinet about this. He used his hardline language that they did the wrong thing, they won't get assistance yet. Now that they are on their way, because of course of, their legal right as Australian citizens to try and get themselves on an aeroplane and manage their way through, if they are to arrive, I mean, until they're on the soil of Australia, but if they do arrive and make it here, and it looks very likely that they will because the government's clearly all planning for it, the message was, we're going to throw everything at it. Don't worry. And that's a political message as well as an operational one.
Yeah, and it was fascinating, right? Because I think both the Prime Minister and Tony Burke have had a pretty robotic response on any question in relation to this cohort that we're not repatriating, we're not assisting in any way. Fine. But now we're at the point, and that's why it was very fortunate to have the three of them there this morning answering questions on this, given, they're either on the plane or about to get on the plane to land tomorrow night. To get a bit more clarity around this. And it came from Chrissy Barrett, the Federal Police Commissioner, and she gave, I thought, some much-needed information on what is now going to happen. So she said some individuals in this group of 13 will be arrested and charged. So there are four women you would expect that, you know, she's indicating the adults there. We don't know whether it's one, two, three or four, but some will be arrested and charged. Some will face, she said, continued investigations when they arrive in Australia. And the children, she said, will be asked to undergo community integration programs, therapeutic support, and countering violent extremism programs. That, she didn't say they will be required. She said they'll be asked to undergo those things. But, I mean, they're the sort of things you would expect to happen. It was just important, I think, to hear that clarity from the Federal Police Commissioner about that. The other thing that really struck me on the politics of this, as you would know, the opposition, Angus Taylor, have been saying for a while now that there hasn't been enough monitoring or assessments. I interviewed Angus Taylor a couple of weeks ago on Insiders. He said we needed more information about the assessments. We know that ASIO assessed all the adults in that camp back in 2022, and Angus Taylor was suggesting, you know, he didn't trust the government had done enough on this. Anyway, we heard from Chrissy Barrett, the Federal Police Commissioner. She said that for more than a decade, investigators have been collecting evidence and information in Syria, and that was used to determine whether the Australians may have committed offences. So she's indicating there that since 2015, so more than a decade, there has been operational planning. There's been work with state and federal joint counterterrorism teams and ASIO to collect evidence and information on this cohort and get ready for their return. So it just struck me that that was the Federal Police Commissioner making it clear that, no, we've been on this for more than a decade. Mm. And that, of course, is under successive governments.
There was a question, I think, to the Prime Minister in relation to how much it will cost, because obviously it's pretty expensive to monitor these people as well. Mm. I think that's part of the price tag of, you know, having to deal with this cohort and making sure that people feel, the community feels, a level of safety and trust, particularly given how raw it is for so many people. You know, we only had the Bondi terror attack last year. You can understand that there is, I think, and we've got an anti-Semitism Royal Commission right now. Now, you know, I'm not conflating everything, but what I'm suggesting is that there are real life concerns about some of the more radical views of people who've been radicalized like this by ISIS. You know, like, this is pretty scary stuff if you read any of the materials, and I don't, you know, don't even advise you to, it's revolting, but of some of these ideologies, they're pretty frightening stuff. So the public has a right to feel safe, and the government has to provide that security. And of course, then there's the weaponization of this, and we're already seeing some of that by the opposition. They see an opportunity here, and you can see why. Having said that, let's not forget that even Scott Morrison assisted some of these children coming back, didn't he, David? So, you know, it's not like we haven't embarked on this before. So have other countries. We are not the only country to deal with this problem.
Well, the US wants everyone to take their citizens
back
from these camps.
Because the view is that if they continue to stay there, they are more of a threat in terms of terror than they even are here, where we can manage it differently. Having said that, this still is, I think, an uncomfortable moment for the government.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can see that from the very nature of their responses. They just do not like to be talking about this at all. Yes, it is expensive monitoring anyone who's on the radar of the agencies like this. You know, just to go back to what they were announcing today, the more difficult thing is finding people they should be monitoring when they're radicalised so quickly online. Here they have people they know they need to monitor, and they will be from what we heard this morning. And yes, we don't know the price tag of that, but it's not going to be cheap. Funding is increasing. Is it ever enough to deal with the nature of this threat? That's the question. But this will be an ongoing concern for the agencies. Mike Burgess, the ASIO boss, in his remarks this morning, did express that you know, he was, I forget the exact word that he used, but he suggested that he was okay with the arrangements that were in place. They've only issued one temporary exclusion order to keep one of these women out. That's not presumably someone who's part of the cohort that's making their way here to Australia now, but none of the others have reached that threshold of a temporary exclusion order to actually ban an Australian citizen from coming home.
Mm. You can imagine the circus at the airport when they arrive. Yeah. We know what flights they're coming back on, so this is going to be quite the story in the next couple of days. And, of course, state governments will also be speaking as well, like the New South Wales minister's been speaking today about how they'll integrate them. Remember, though, it wasn't that long ago that the states were a little more open-minded in terms of the way they were talking about these ISIS people coming home, you know, saying that the kids will be educated in New South Wales schools, all of that sort of thing, when it was at fever pitch. And now you're seeing why, because they were clearly preparing for the inevitability of this, which is why it's now on the cards. The government doesn't want to be talking about this, but, you know, in the next couple of days, I suspect they won't be able to avoid it. So it'll be interesting to see how they consistently try to, you know, just take down the temperature that's quite high on this issue and whether they'll be able to successfully do it or not, David.
Yeah, it will be. You know, what is going to happen at the airport is a good question. Do they get hurried out the back door, or I don't know how that all works? And then, yes, often with these things, there'll be a lot of heat and attention over the first few days of their return to Australia. But, you know, it's up to the agencies to keep an eye on them. You can understand communities will have sensitivity around, you know, kids being in the same school or in the same, living in the same street and so on. All of that. Look, Chrissy Barrett also did indicate that there had been meetings, consultation with affected communities, those who are most sensitive to anyone who's had sympathy for ISIS in the past. So that happened last time as well under that previous group that you mentioned. So not surprising that it's happened here, but the yeah, the agencies, the police and ASIO stressing that they are doing all they can to prepare for this moment.
Now, David, that's it for politics now today, but it's not really it, because we've got quite a bit to do, including
busy week.
You're off to Farrah tomorrow ahead of the by-election on Saturday, where we'll be reunited face-to-face. We're not quite face-to-face. I'm looking at you on a computer screen, but we'll be, yeah, face-to-face.
We get to hang out together on Saturday night.
I know. It's my favourite thing to do on a Saturday night.
Doing what we love, covering a by-election. That'll be fun. Yeah, I'm going to go down for a couple of days. I can't get across. It's a big electorate. I can't get across all of it in a couple of days. But
you cannot.
So try and get a sense of what the mood is there. We've heard a lot from the pollies. What do the people think? We'll bring a bit of that to you in the Insiders on Background podcast this weekend as well. And then, yes, we get to hang out Saturday night and go through all of the results with Casey Briggs. That'll be fun.
Yeah, it will be really fun. And, like, beyond fun, it'll be fascinating to see how One Nation really does go. There's been a lot of negative stories about One Nation. Today, a poll out by Redbridge in the AFR about the way that the Trump connection or Pauline Hanson's support for Trump is hurting her. So it'll be interesting to see whether that sort of resonates or whether David Farley, the One Nation candidate, is able to still continue his ascendancy. Mm. All of that very interesting. And Fran and I, can I say, are holding a live show tonight to celebrate 10 years of the Party Room. So I've come here to Sin City, Sydney, to live my best life and provide you nothing short of entertainment and politics, which is the same thing.
And some brave predictions, some more brave predictions, PK, too.
Probably, because I'm loose and I don't care. And I'm shameless, which is my best and worst quality, David, as you know. So I will say things and then not care if I got them wrong. If you didn't nab a ticket or you aren't even in Sydney, because we've got a really big country here. In fact, we've also got many international listeners. So that would be really hard, you know, with petrol and everything. Jet fuel's an issue. Don't fret. We're going to put out the podcast on Thursday, so you will get to listen. And if you have a question for us, send a short voice note to thepartyroom@abc.net.au. See you, David.
See you, PK.